From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. Here's what's happening. Florida health officials reportedly have found evidence of local Zika virus transmissions now in Miami Beach. Of course, the very popular tourist haven that saw 15.4 million holiday revelers flock to the beaches just last year alone. A source familiar with the discussions that took place between the Florida State Health Department representatives and local officials claims that a handful of cases have been identified, and officials are now deciding which area or areas to include in any updated travel guidance, possibly threatening the region's $24 billion a year tourism industry. Zika transmitted primarily from mosquitoes. A U.S. Food and Drug Administration tests have found that hepatitis A in scallops from the Philippines, which have been identified as the likely source of an outbreak now of the virus in Hawaii. The Hawaii Department of Health announced that the FDA laboratory test results of frozen Seaport Bay scallops produced by Deora Resources. Two people arrested after a tip led Florida police to a funeral home where they found 16 bodies in varying degrees of decay. The funeral director, a 64-year-old man, and the 39-year-old daughter of the funeral home's owner arrested and charged with a combined 18 misdemeanor counts of unlawful storage of human remains. Donald Trump's outspoken campaign manager, Paul Manafort, has resigned days after he was pushed aside by the conservative media executive Stephen Bannon, and also amid growing speculation about his ties to Ukrainian politics. Meanwhile, a brilliant maneuver perfectly timed by Donald Trump to complement his campaign revamp. The Republican nominee landed in Louisiana to witness firsthand the devastation wrought by flooding not seen there since Hurricane Katrina pummeled the Gulf Coast in 2005. Howard Bloom, who's also the expert on the human mind with us. Howard, Donald Trump finally pulled off a great maneuver.
Well, he jumped in there at a time when the experts say you should not be going in because the amount of security it takes to take care of your flotilla of cars takes away from what first responders are doing to actually help victims. But it is a brilliant maneuver. And you're getting, you know, everybody knows about the Paul Manafort switch. Everybody knows that there's been very bad news for Hillary, that there is a judge in Washington who has said that she must give written testimony about about her email server in response to a conservative legal group called Judicial Watch, which is, it, frankly, in the professional business of hunting the Clintons. It filed 18 lawsuits against Bill Clinton's administration in the 1990s. So that's happening. Donald is losing in the polls. He's 8% behind in Huffington Post's average of 10 polls, and he's 5% behind in the New York Times average of another 10 polls.
And coming up on some other polls.
Yes, but the real deal is this. What you're not getting from the sound bites and the headlines is the change in Donald Trump's rhetoric. And that came out last night in a Thursday night speech in Charlotte, North Carolina, where he said, here's how he saw his week, which the pundits were all saying was a mess. He said, last week I laid out my plan to bring jobs back to our country. On Monday, I laid out my plan to defeat radical Islamic terrorism. On Tuesday in Wisconsin, I talked about how we were going to restore law and order to this country. And then he rolled out a brand new phrase. He says he is going to bring, quote, a new American future, unquote. And here's more of the rhetoric he was using. First of all, he said about Louisiana, we are one nation. When one state hurts, we all hurt. And we must all work together to lift each other up, which sounds, frankly, straight out of a Barack Obama speech. Then he went on to say the chaos and violence on our streets and the assaults on law enforcement are an attack against all peaceful citizens. If I am elected president, this chaos and violence will end, and it will end very quickly. But you got to do a quick fact check here, because from 1991 in the George Bush senior era to 2013 in the Barack Obama era, murders have dropped by almost 50%, actually by 43%. That's nearly a half. That's whopping. And then he says, you've heard this quote, Sometimes in the heat of debate and speaking out on a multitude of issues, you don't choose the right words or say the wrong things. I have done that, and I regret it, particularly where it may have caused personal pain. And now here's how he spun it. Too much is at stake for us to be consumed with these issues. In other words, the press is paying too much attention to them. And one thing I can promise you, he says, is this. I will always tell you the truth. I speak the truth for all of you and for everyone in this country who doesn't have a voice. Our campaign is about representing the great majority of Americans, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Conservatives, and Liberals who read the newspaper or turn on the TV and don't hear anyone speaking for them. All they hear are insiders fighting for insiders. He says, I am going to be your voice. That's what we haven't been getting to hear on the headlines.
And it's a big move for him. Howard, thanks. We'll continue talking with you as we watch this campaign unfold. A bright flash that lit up parts of the San Diego sky Thursday night continues to remain a mystery. The streak of light lasted a few seconds before it disappeared, but the flash was captured on a dash cam. I think it was a meteorite, but let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center for his weekly report. But Peter, did you get calls about that one?
I have not, and this is the first I've heard of it. I'm quite surprised, George. I'll go back through our reports and see if I've picked something up.
Sure.
But I'm not surprised by an event like that because I've been bowled over by reports over the last 72 hours. Over the last 3 days, we've updated our website on two occasions and have added about 290 new reports to our database. There's a lot going on. I'd like to start with a very dramatic sighting that occurred over Providence, Rhode Island on Tuesday of this week, about 5:30 in the morning. A couple was up getting ready to go to work. The husband was out in the garden walking their dog, and the wife was inside. He suddenly started shouting for his wife. She ran outside, and they were witness for about 10 minutes to a very dramatic display of a vermilion-red object that was maneuvering in the sky so abruptly, I think fighter pilots call it jinking in referring to how this object was moving left to right, up and down, back and forth. It was a very dramatic sighting. The wife is a professional in the medical industry, highly trained, probably both of them a very highly reliable couple of witnesses. The next night, this makes it on the 17th, Wednesday of this week, Wesley Chapel, something very similar. Two red lights seen ascending from the horizon into the night sky, into the northern sky. Very interesting report. And last night, something very similar. If you'd been outside at about 8:23 p.m. in the Los Angeles area, looking at the night sky, you probably would have seen the object that this very skilled sky watcher describes in her report. She's a very skilled sky watcher and trained astronomer. She saw a very bizarre object rise from the horizon in the northern sky. She saw it about 2 degrees to the east of north and about 20 degrees above the horizontal plane. Very interesting sighting. But I mention all of these red and orange orb sightings, George, for a particular reason. Last night, there was something seen over St. Simon's Island, I think it's correctly pronounced. This is just north of the infamous Jekyll Island, which you know
mm-hmm.
of.
Know it well.
Where the Federal Reserve was begun in late November 1910. A gentleman was standing outside, very highly trained gentleman. He saw not just an orange orb that I've been blabbing about all these so many months, but rather an orange triangular-shaped ship with a plume of exhaust coming out the backside of it, streaked across at least half of the sky, he estimates, in about 5 to 10 seconds. As he was digesting that information, which shocked him to the roots of his soul, here comes a second one along the same flight path as the first one. Very, very interesting sighting. So there appears to have been a change in the nature of these sightings of red, orange, and yellow objects. Again, as I mentioned, they're no longer just fireballs. And this morning at 12:53 a.m. in Vero Beach, Florida, a gentleman who's a very highly skilled observer, I say that because he owns a fleet of executive jets and teaches people how to fly them. Probably a very, very reliable witness, very skilled witness. Got some very good video of an object that was streaking across the early morning sky. At first, he thought it was a meteor, similar to what was reported from San Diego last night. Perhaps the same thing, although it's a stretch to try to connect the two. He got some very good video of an object that streaked across the sky. It slowed down, and then it hovered and drifted. So clearly, clearly not any kind of meteor. And finally, last report from Los Angeles, East Los Angeles this morning, gentleman and two of his daughters were seeing his wife off to work. This is about 6:30 in the morning, 6:55 in the morning. They sent the wife and mother off to work. They turned around, and here's a disc-shaped object hovering over the 710 freeway. I invite the Coast listeners, who I'm sure are a discriminating bunch of people. They don't probably not predisposed to listen or believe every word I say, but I invite them to read the report, East Los Angeles, for this morning. They saw a disc-shaped craft hovering over Interstate 710.
Great stories. Thanks, Peter. Appreciate it. Do you know what a paranormal vortex is? Well, you will after you hear from Joshua P. Warren next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome this Friday night into Saturday morning, Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, our special guest tonight for the next couple hours, of course, paranormal investigator Joshua P. Warren, who continues to amaze me, Josh, on the amount of paranormal research you undertake. Unbelievable. How have you been?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm pumped. I am so excited, George, because we are going to be sharing an overview, a slice, a spectrum of much of this work when you visit Asheville next weekend for the big program here in Asheville, North Carolina.
I'm looking forward to that. We're going to talk about that in about 10 minutes. Great event, Josh, and you, of course, you're one of the headliners there for me. You've been doing a lot of research into now what we call paranormal vortexes. What are they?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, vortexes and portals are kind of related. So let me start with a portal. Portal is a place where there seems to be an imbalance between what we usually think of as the physical world and what we usually think of as the non-physical world. And so you might envision it as kind of a wormhole. It's a spot that allows certain information and or beings to sort of travel back and forth more easily between these areas that are, again, considered either physical or non-physical. Now, a vortex is, again, similar but a little different. Imagine a vortex as being shaped like a tornado. And these usually are larger, and some vortexes draw energy into the earth, and some release energy out of the earth. And so most people, like, for example, psychic Paige Bryant, who wrote a book about this subject many years ago, think of vortexes as being male or female in origin, or positive or negative. Some call them electric or magnetic, but not in the same technical sense that a scientist would. And so ultimately what we're talking about are areas where energy can either flow in or out of the earth on a grander scale, or places where we are able to come into contact with strange phenomena more easily. And to further exemplify this, a lot of researchers over the years have noticed, for example, that there is this range of the United States between the 35th and 37th parallel, where it seems a lot of paranormal activity and areas are found. In this range, you'll find Area 51. You'll find Joplin, Missouri, where you have the Joplin spook line. Mm-hmm. There is Dulce, New Mexico, where a lot of folks believe there is an alien military base. Taos, New Mexico.
Sedona,
this, you
know, right?
Tum has been heard.
Sedona, Arizona.
It's all that area, amazingly enough. It all sort of lines up, and North Carolina falls very well within this boundary. As a matter of fact, Asheville is right at about 35.5 degrees latitude. So let's look at just this area And you'll see how condensed it seems to be here. For one thing, Asheville is the heart of what many scientists believe are the oldest mountains in North America. Also, there is incredible quartz content in these mountains, and we know that quartz has this amazing relationship with electricity and changing frequencies and pretty much transducing energy from one form into another. And if you start drawing a line east from Asheville, well, you hit Brown Mountain, where the Brown Mountain lights are seen. And of course, we'll come back to that subject soon because there is some new information to discuss regarding that. You continue drawing that line east. You hit a place called the Devil's Tramping Ground, which is a big barren circle of land. Nobody can explain why nothing will grow there. And it's said that if you put an object in the middle at night, it will be removed from the circle the next day. And the legend has always been that the devil sort of walks around in a circle at night, mulling over the terrible things he's going to do to people. You continue drawing that line east. You finally hit the coast of North Carolina, where so many ships have sunk. They call it the graveyard of the Atlantic. The very first attempt at an English settlement was right off the coast on Roanoke Island. All those settlers disappeared, and it is now known to history as the Lost Colony. And then you continue drawing that line out east, and you finally hit the island of Bermuda, the top point of the so-called Bermuda Triangle, where I so frequently hang out. And so as you can see, George, these places that we think of as portals or vortexes, they seem to have some design, some pattern, some alignment, and Asheville is right in the midst of a very powerful and significant one.
And these are all natural, Joshua?
Well, you know, that's a great question because it seems that they are originally natural, but some of the work that my team and I have done in the lab has been designed to attempt to create artificial ones, at least temporarily. I mean, even when we were working on the Warner Brothers project, so they were, of course, doing a movie called The Apparition, and they hired me to do some technical work to figure out what it might take to create a ghost in the laboratory. And some of the things that my team and I did were take incredible amounts of voltage and amperage and different frequencies, and we would sort of focus them onto one small area. And once you reach a certain amount of focus, and you get a particular resonance or harmony, what you find is that you actually do achieve that imbalance I was talking about. And when you get imbalance, that's when you get motion. That's when you get some kinetic transfer of energy. That's when you get something from one dimension possibly passing through to another. And that's why that, yes, you might have these big places like the Bermuda Triangle that you can think of as a portal. You might have a large place like Brown Mountain. But it's possible that someone listening to this program right now has one of these things, probably a natural one, that just so happens to be in the basement of his or her house, or maybe the back bedroom.
What do you mean? What do you mean it could be in the basement? Like this portal could be right there in a basement?
Yeah, absolutely. Frequently, people do encounter some type of a small portal at one point in a so-called haunted house. And it may be that there is spiritual activity happening all around the house, but it's only able to sort of manifest in a more physical state around the portal, because that's where the interface occurs. That's where the interaction exists. And so I always tell people, if you live in a house and there is one particular spot that makes you feel a little lightheaded, if there is a spot where you see stranger things, for example, maybe you have objects that are constantly being displaced, or maybe light bulbs blow frequently at this spot, or maybe the rest of the house is warm, but this one little area is cold, this could be a portal. And there's actually a very simple technique that one can use to try to get more information about those spots.
So if there's this portal or vortex, which means you might be able to stumble into it, and we're going to talk about what that is when we come back, but also, can something come through it, Josh?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, essentially, whether we have information coming through, which allows one to sort of psychically glimpse things on the other side, or some entity coming through the whole purpose of these is to provide that kind of transportation for these other energy fields and beings.
Let's talk about that. What can go in there and what can come out? Joshua P. Warren, our special guest. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take calls with Joshua Warren on the paranormal and the supernatural next hour, and then we'll have open lines later on tonight. Right now, we're talking with him about paranormal vortexes. And as you heard him mention, he is going to be one of our headliners next week, Saturday, August 27th, in Asheville, North Carolina, where he is now in our major live event. He's one of three major guests. Bill Forsten will be there talking about X-flares and EMPs, and Micah Hanks will be talking about some UFO activity. Plus, we've got some surprises for you, and Josh has brought together, and a piece of the Roswell wreckage will be there under guard, but you'll be able to look at it and touch it and take pictures with it too. Then we'll have a meet and greet. But we've got 8 seats left on the bottom, then everything else goes to the balcony. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com, click the picture of Asheville, North Carolina. You'll see it right there. It'll take you to the theater's website. Look for the date, August 27th, which should be now the first event at the top there. You click that, pick your tickets, and we'll see you on August 27th. Joshua P. Warren with us. Okay, Josh, couple twofold question. First, if you can go into a vortex or a portal, what is it like? What happens to you? And then can you come back?
Well, you know, George, I don't know that a person usually physically slips completely into one. I think that sometimes in the Bermuda Triangle that may happen. And probably when one actually physically goes completely into a vortex or one of these portals, that person emerges in a version of reality that may be similar to this one, but just a little bit different. What I mean by that is we can look at some of these interdimensional creatures like hellhounds and some of these, you know, dragon-like beasts that look like dinosaurs that have been captured on film over the years. And if you take something like a hellhound, essentially, you know, the creature, it looks dog-like enough for us to recognize it as a canine. So there has been some similarity in how it has sort of evolved in its own sort of biological way. But on the other hand, it also has characteristics that you don't find in a dog here. Usually these creatures are much, much bigger. They're much denser. They have glowing red eyes. Mm-hmm. They may have a heat that emanates from them. And so probably this other dimension, if you will, that you would go directly into would be recognizable to you, but it would be filled with things that would be a little bit extraordinary. But what's much more likely, George, is to experience traveling into these things mentally. And this is maybe a little similar to what happens when people do remote viewing. And I have a little tip for everybody listening to the show. If you want to know whether or not your house or your piece of property may have one of these vortexes, there's something quite simple you can do. Get yourself a wire. You could even take something like a wire coat hanger, and then you can unbend it into a large straight piece of wire. Get a sheet of aluminum foil, just like you would use for a sandwich.
All right.
And make a ball out of it that's about the size of, we'll say, a ping pong ball. It could be a little larger, that's fine. And you stick this ball on the end. So now you have in front of you what looks like sort of a metal wand. It's a metal wire with a metal ball on the end. You put that in either one of your hands. It doesn't matter. Usually your dominant hand is best. And then you take that ball while you're holding the wire on the opposite end, and you place the ball between your eyes. It could be a little above, sort of in the traditional third eye position. And then when you do that, you can walk around your piece of property. And if you walk into one of these places that is already a subtle portal, well, this is going to enhance it tremendously, because what you're really doing is you're creating a biofeedback loop. And so what this means is that suddenly you are going to have a mental experience. There may be very vivid colors that flash in your mind. You might actually see some kind of imagery from somewhere else. You may have at least a strong pressure or a tingling sensation, but there will be a very clear subjective experience that happens when you, as an organism that has evolved on this planet for so many years, when you step into one of these things and you magnify it using this technique.
Is it like quicksand, Joshua? I mean, do you just disappear?
Well, I think that in many cases, this might be what happens. I mean, I'm not sure if you recall, George, but I have a relative who vanished pretty much in mid-sentence. And I'll just quickly recap this. This is something that happened before I was born, but it was a major tragedy in my family. I had a great uncle named Claude Calloway, and during the Depression era, Claude, who was then in his late 20s, and his father, a man named Jack, went on a hunting trip. And when they came back down out of the mountains, Claude's younger sister, Virginia, who was my grandmother, she took a photograph of those two, Claude and their father, Jack, holding up rabbits and squirrels and a little small game. And then when the picture developed, Claude did not have a head in the photograph. And of course, they knew that that was weird, but they didn't realize enough about photography to understand just how odd it was. Well, fast forward 1 month later, Claude was sitting on the porch reading a copy of a magazine called Western Magazine, old Gunslinger Tales. Jack was in the kitchen making lunch for the two. They were conversing back and forth through an open window. And at one point, Jack spoke to Claude, and Claude just didn't answer. And he walked outside, and here's the magazine on the porch.
Oh, my gosh.
But no Claude. And my great uncle Claude Calloway was never seen or heard from again. And they did everything possible to search the woods. And I mean, and they never, obviously, they never got over that. They never had closure. And it may be that one of my own relatives was one of these people who happened to
disappear,
literally pop into another dimension.
How many people disappear on this planet every year, and people just have no idea where they are?
Yeah, it's chilling when you go and you read some of the FBI statistics, and you see how many people just vanish, thousands of them, and there's never any lead. And you know, George, often this occurs in national forests. And now you might think, okay, well, that's logical because these are rugged places, these are untamed places. But it also turns out, because that humans have not tampered with that land so much, you may have some of these natural portals and vortexes that are still strong and pure. For example, you know, I mentioned there was some new news regarding the Brown Mountain lights. Well, Brown Mountain is in the Pisgah National Forest. It's about 45 minutes from Asheville. In fact, I've gotten emails from people who are coming to the event next weekend who say they're going to also fit in a trip to go up to the Overlook.
Oh, they might as well do it all, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully they'll come visit my museum and take my tours while they're at it. nonetheless, Brown Mountain is this, you know, low-lying ridge there in the National Forest. People have seen these balls of light appearing on and around this ridge for at least 100 years. And really hundreds of years if you want to consider pioneer legends and Native American accounts. And I want everybody to know, if you go to coasttocoastam.com, you'll see some images related to the Brown Mountain phenomenon. And while you're clicking around, every single person listening tonight can get a free copy of the book that I wrote on the Brown Mountain Lights as a PDF. You can download it tonight. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, that's my personal website. There is no period after the P. If you go to joshuapwarren.com and scroll down, you'll find the place to download this book that I wrote that has great information on this. And I dig into a lot of the portal vortex type energy theories, we'll say. Well, all these years, George, for 24 years, my team and I have been going up to Brown Mountain, which is considered one of these famous portals, and getting permits from the Forest Service and camping out at night and documenting these strange illuminations. In fact, in the year 2000, we got the first really good images of what we believe are the Brown Mountain Lights. Now, over these years, the media has had a tendency to pit me and my opinions about the lights against a professor at Appalachian State University named Dr. Dan Caton. And Dan Caton has always been, understandably, you know, very skeptical, very reserved about the lights. And just 3 years ago, he and one of his colleagues put two cameras up there overlooking Brown Mountain, and they just announced days ago that last month they finally themselves captured some of these strange illuminations hovering over Brown Mountain that cannot be explained. And now this is coming from the mainstream scientific community. And it's funny to me, George, that all these years, Dr. Caton has not only been very reserved in his opinion, but frankly, he's also been very condescending when it comes to people in the community who have been witnesses.
Really? So, he puts them down?
Oh, yeah. He himself has said, I went from being skeptical to being cynical.
Wow.
So now that he has come out and said these lights are there, it's a big, big deal, and I think he owes the community an apology for his demeanor all these years.
Well, now, let me be the devil's advocate here. Devil's advocate saying that to you is kind of spooky. But how do we know this isn't like plasma balls floating all over the place?
Well, you know, I actually think that these are plasma balls, but the point is, in a vortex, you actually get these things that will manifest in extreme energetic forms. So that is to say that the balls themselves may be a natural phenomenon. Some people believe that they are, some kind of intelligent being. And I personally don't know about that. I've never seen personal evidence that they have consciousness. But the fact that you have a spot where such an extraordinary natural phenomenon is capable of manifesting shows you this is a byproduct of what we call in the paranormal field one of these vortexes or portals. And so essentially, some of the effects that you get at these places are very, very subtle. But in a case like Brown Mountain, they can be literally visible. So you're seeing visible aspects of one of these that happens to be occurring on a grand scale.
Joshua, could there be a rip or a tear somewhere out there that creates some of this too?
Well, I don't see why not. I mean, you know, it's funny because we are so egocentric that, if we step outside and we hear the birds chirping and the sun is shining and everything's peaceful, we forget that somewhere out there, there's a volcano blasting or there's an earthquake occurring or there's a ship sinking. I mean, the Earth is an extremely dynamic place, and we are able to perceive a very small sliver of what's happening here. And in the same way that we look at something like atmospheric weather, I think we have what you might call dimensional weather. So that means that there are times when the energy environment within and around the Earth, it ripples and it surges and it has its own storms. And, of course, you mentioned the work of our friend Dr. Bill Forstian. He talks a lot about the impact that solar flares can make on the energy environment around the planet. And so there may be times when, due to something cosmic, you get a rip or a tear in this energy environment, and it makes these portals and warp areas much more active and pronounced, and the activity can become even more noticeable.
Josh, our friend Tim Beckley took some pictures of something called the alien mummy. Can you explain that one?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, one of the cool things about Brown Mountain is that, you know, all these years, it has really helped people use their imagination and create a lot of different ideas about what's happening. So people who are into ghosts might say these are spirits of Native Americans who died in battle. People who are into aliens might say, well, these are lights from some kind of alien spacecraft. And then, of course, you have a lot of different scientific theories. And again, going back to Dr. Caton's work, it's impressive that we even now have further evidence that from a scientific point of view, this is perplexing. But a lot of people have over the years claimed to have been abducted by aliens around Brown Mountain. In fact, there was a film called Alien Abduction that was set at Brown Mountain that came out a few years ago. That was a fictional movie, but, you know, inspired by all this. And one of the people who really helped to solidify this alien abduction reputation was a man named Ralph Lael, who lived in the area of Brown Mountain during the 1960s and 70s. And he had a little shop there where he sold souvenirs and gemstones to support himself. And he claimed that he was in regular contact with these beings that resided sometime within a crystal cave located inside of Brown Mountain. And the funny thing is, I never got to meet Ralph Lael, George, because he actually he died kind of young, and there are some suspicious circumstances about how he died, not surprisingly. But when I talked to people who knew him, they say he didn't come across like a quack. I mean, they say the guy seemed very rational and reasonable. And Tim Beckley got to meet Ralph Lael in I think so maybe 64 to 66 in that period. And Tim said that he and a friend went into Ralph Lael's shop, and they struck up a nice conversation with him. And at one point, Lael revealed that he had a little mummified alien body. And of course, that's not something you hear every day. And so Lael invited Tim Beckley to go into the back room and showed him this little body that Beckley said you could obviously see was organic. It didn't look like something that was, you know, made by, you know, pasting together something artificial. And Ralph Lael allowed Tim Beckley to take a photograph of it. And after all these years, I'm only aware of two photographs that exist of this alien mummy. Sadly, after Ralph Lael died, somebody came in, bulldozed his shop to the ground, and there is no record whatsoever of what happened to this body. But if you go to coasttocoastam.com, you will see Tim Beckley's photograph there of this little alien that Ralph Lael showed him.
You love doing what you're doing, Josh, don't you?
Oh, you know, the whole wonder of it all, I mean, it humbles you, because the moment I have this sense that I've understood something or I've figured something out, it seems like variables change. And I think that's why I have a big problem with some of these so-called scientists out there who are sort of dismissive and condescending when it comes to a lot of people coming forth and talking about their strange experiences, because there's so much good information we can't get access to because people are afraid of being ridiculed. And the reality is, if scientists knew everything about what was happening around us, there wouldn't really be much of a need for science anymore. I mean, the purpose is to explore. And it's funny, when you have some of the smartest cosmologists and astrophysicists out there telling you that over 95% of the observable universe consists of what we call dark matter or dark energy, which is defined by the very fact that we have no clue what it is, it's extremely exciting. It's frustrating for a lot of people who want all the answers. But to me, it means, well, there are things out there that can blow your mind, but they're not just way out there. They also can be right here. Like I say, right in your basement, right in your bedroom, right inside your mind. I mean, we are all interconnected in the same universe.
Josh, would you give out your website, please, for folks who want to track the many things that you do?
Yeah, well, thank you, George. You know, on my website, I have a section called the Gallery of the Strange, and it's got all kinds of great pictures and videos of ghosts and UFOs and psychic phenomena and cryptids and things that I believe are credible. And if you go to joshuapwarren.com, you can click around and really spend hours looking at these things and exploring all kinds of topics. And I always remind people, there is no period after the P. Just go to joshuapwarren.com. And if you go there right now and scroll down and look at some of the images from our Brown Mountain Lights research,
great stuff.
You can also click and get a free copy of the book.
Excellent. And Josh, of course, will be one of our main headliner guests on the August 27th event in Asheville, North Carolina, full of full information at coasttocoastam.com. We're coming back next with open line phone calls with Joshua P. Warren on the paranormal. Your stories, your questions next.